Blog Talk Radio.
This is the voice of Mocha 868, and you're listening to The Living Room, brought to you by El Nostro Reino Radio. Welcome to our kingdom.
morning, good morning, good morning. And that was Scientific playing in the background. The track is called Del Sol. If you're interested in buying or leasing any music from Scientific, you can email him at scientific@gmail.com. That's scyntfk@gmail.com. scyntfk@gmail.com. I want to give a special thank you to Scientific. And before we start, I want to go ahead and give a huge thank you to Mocha868 for setting up that first show that we had. Absolutely brilliant. None of it would have came out without her. So she is, like I said, the glue that's keeping this place together right now. And really, really appreciate all that she's doing. And hopefully, I'm seeing Squibble can't get his link to work. I'm hoping that changes up. But let me go. It's been a while since we've spent a morning together. But hello, Raz. How you doing, brother?
Hello, JCA. Great to see you here at the Golden Hour. Scientific.
Oh,
it sounds like a great artist. I liked what I was hearing. Delray, it reminds me a bit of Deltron 3030, what there is in the dedication piece there. You know, he started mostly on the underground before becoming famous as Delta Funky Homo Sapien.
Yep. Yeah, that's a great point. Oh, yeah, true. Yeah. Yeah, Scientific is pretty much doing all of our music, and we really appreciate all he's doing for us. We'll be giving out more information on all the artists that are helping us out during these shows. And we pretty much want to let everybody know that we're going to have regular shows on Sundays and on Thursdays now. So this is The Living Room. Welcome to The Living Room. And we're very excited to have each and every person here. We're going to be waiting for a few more people to call in. But what we can do in the meantime, if Raz, if you can, let me get a poem for you to read for us. And I'm probably going to have you start out with Patrick's poem here.
Yeah, I thought you were just going to ask me to sit down on the couch and repeat a rerun of Frasier as a living room. I'll do the poem.
Yeah, we're going to do a little, like I said, this is going to be an interesting show. First of all, Raz, before you read this poem by P.M. Murphy, tell me, in your opinion, what makes up a good gold poem?
A good gold winner, you have to have the right qualities that everyone else in the contest did not answer the prompt as best as possible compared to your work.
That is a great, great answer. And I'm going to be asking you more questions as we go along here. In the meantime, go ahead and grab a hold of P.M. Murphy's and let me hear it.
Yeah. I guess this is for people familiar with the site, that there's gold winners, right? AllPoetry.com. We have these contests on a regular basis, every day of the week. So here's Bea Murphy in Drench. Drench. Night falls, it's a body, where I lay painting on it a new horizon, leaving tomorrow's fragile. Today, an easy eclipse, simple parting sun. Fall, in me and let me feel the breeze so warm that I forget the midnight chills. And poem.
Such a great poem. You know, brevity is always hard to write. But when you bring brevity with raw emotion, that's when brevity really stands out. This one had some incredible raw emotion. Now, like you said earlier, Raz, we are all part of this group called AllPoetry.com. And in AllPoetry.com, they have contests run by its own members. And the members themselves go ahead and bring something special to each one of the contests and to each one of the poems that they write for these contests. Now, this contest itself was in any style, let's see, as long as it's new. So it's kind of a new poem there. And I think that he did a wonderful job bringing this forth. Patrick is an incredible writer, and I really love the way he pulls everything together. Now, before I get a comment from you, Raz, I really want to I want to bring in the right hand that makes me right hand dominant. And I want to welcome to the show the person who really does an awesome job, and I thank her so much. Hey, Mocha, how you doing?
Hi, Jay. How are we today?
We're getting through it. So I'm kind of excited about this day. Talking about gold, we just read Patrick's poem, and we got one more person on the line, and that should
be
we got Raz's twin on the line, Rack. Hey, Rack.
I should be so fortunate.
Racky,
how you doing, guys? Hey.
Welcome.
How you doing, guys?
Nice to hear your voice.
Yeah, I completely spaced out. I was working on a bowl of soup, and I was like, oh, shit.
No soup for you. No soup for you. Okay.
Nutrition is important.
Yeah. It really is. Yeah. I had some fruit this morning, so I feel pretty good. Raz, you read Patrick's poem. What did you think about this poem?
Yeah, one of those that just portrayed what it's like being in a deep state of fear or emotional overwhelming type of sensation that you can't get rid of those chills. And so if you're soaking your own sweat, then you're likelier to be in effect biologically, psychologically, at a higher active level than when everything is completely calm and normal. It's showing some sign of external disturbance by the midnight chills and the fact of the drenching of the sweat, which leads it to have its own form of enigma as to why is this person really on the verge of getting rid of all that excessive heat, and yet it's, you know, 60, 20 degrees below freezing.
That's a great question. So why do you think this one won the gold out of this contest?
I'd say whoever judged the contest, they found it to be unique compared to some of the other entries, depending on the font.
Excellent. Yeah, this was a pretty much an anything right here contest, and that's what I love about some of these contests. You can just put anything in there you want. This was judged 2 years ago, And I think that he did a wonderful job. Mocha, how are you doing today? And did you get a chance to check this one out?
I did. I did. It's a cute little brevity. Patrick has a very unique writing style. I do love how phrased this thing is. Today is an easy eclipse, simple parting.
Wonderful. Now, I'm going to give a little bit of a share on me. Sometimes I'll run a contest here or there, and I've done quite a few contests. But what I'm looking for is I'm looking for things that really pop me as far as emotion goes, as far as the overall feel of the best. I look for unique, I look for emotion, and I look for different things like this. And, okay, Squibble sent us the wrong poem. Okay, gotcha, brother. We'll get that one up for you. And I really am glad the way that people write for me. Judging is one of the hardest things to do in the world, and it's one of the things that I really kind of fear in everything. So I'm really glad about the way that we can do all of this, have our freedom in judging and everything like that. So kind of excited about the direction we're taking for this. As a matter of fact, Squibble's piece is on the board. I'll go ahead and read that. Mocha, I'm going to ask Mocha a question. Let me bound to my questions here. Now, you're relatively new in having contests. You've had a couple of them. What are you primarily looking for in a gold winner?
Someone who followed the instructions I gave specific to the contest. That's my number one thing. So if I ask that you create a character, that's what I'm going to judge your poem on, how well you did that. And I like to give people scores for how much literary skill they put into it as well. So if they use a form, if they use lots of metaphors and imagery and literary devices, I try to score like that. I try to keep it as fair as possible also. I really want to try and be a judge that goes for the best quality poem rather than just simply the one that I liked best, you know?
That's a great way to look at things, you know? The whole thing about these contests is many of them are primarily subjective. And each judge has their own way of picking what they want. And I think that is a great way to do this. So what I'm going to do next is I'm going to read Squibble's poem, which is on the board. And I just put it in the topic link for anybody who wants to grab a hold and look at it. But this is what he would like. This is called "The Scars Are on the Inside." And it goes like this. I've spent so many years battling conflicts internally that I can't tell the difference if it's them or if it's me. Who is winning? Who is losing? Who is right and who is wrong? I Will I finally break or just keep bruising? Will my music play on, or is this my last song? Mentally beaten, bent but not broken, yet unsure of how long I can last. 1,000 times I've survived this shit, but my energy is depleting fast. When you look at me, you see a wreck, a loser unfit for your society. You think I'm just lazy, a waste of time? You probably even question my piety. What you don't see are my inner wounds, all the battles I've been through, a network of scars that create a map leading me straight to disliking you. Disliking you for your judgment, your ignorant and uneducation. You've no idea how I'd like to be normal or the level of my frustration. I've shielded myself the best I can, but my armor is pretty much destroyed. I'm just a veteran of the psychic wars where the winds of limbo caress my void. End poem.
Wow. I can see why this one goes. I think this was really well put together for the prompt that he gave. Nine actually ran this contest. I love Nine's contest. He runs some really good ones. And Squibble, I think, really delivered on his prompt. But you know who I think would give the best comment on this? Raz, what did you think about this poem?
Yeah, there's plenty of perception here of suffering through a psychological war. And what you have is the opposite side is always going to try to prove that you have no idea what you're talking about. They'll insist upon this point until maybe yourself will give in that you've lost any mode or reflection that's socially, politically relevant. And what there is with psychological warfare is they want you to lose your mind. They want you to have no understanding of the actual truth. So it takes a heavy amount of focus on a unconscious or subconscious level to not lose any grasp of where you have to be psychologically in any situation. This form of measurement is performed not only through the public by more than one government, but it's also a form of propaganda. So you have to be clear in the head if you're going to endure a situation that qualifies as literal psychological warfare.
That's a fantastic comment, and I think I agree with you completely, especially when you look at this stanza, a loser unfit for society, you think I'm just a lazy waste of time. You probably even question my piety. I can see that through and through in this poem. But, you know, I want to ask the veteran on the line what he thinks of it, but first I'll let Rack comment.
It's definitely very emotional. It's got a lot of introspection in it. I liked it for the most part, but, you know, that last line, I couldn't help but flash. That's a line from a Blue Oyster Cult song. And, you know, he didn't, for me, mention anything about psychology or, you know, the psychic part very much in the beginning. It was a very powerful way to end it, but, you know, it almost seemed incongruous to the rest of the poem. But, I enjoyed it all overall. It was very, you know, very emotional, very deep, and introspective.
I agree. Last but not least, our soldier, JCA, read it. What did you think?
Well, I think it was a fantastic depiction of that freaking Blue Oyster Cult song called The Veteran of a Psychic War. And that was the overall prompt, and this is what we got over in All Poetry. We got prompts, different things that inspire us to write particular poems. The feel of the song itself, if you want to know the feel of the song, just read this poem. It grasps a hold of it and blends in so well with the overall emotion of that song. And if anybody wants to check that song out, it is called Veteran of the Psychic War. It's by Blue Oyster Cult. And the words are quite fantastic as well. Squibble did an amazing job on this. And that's one thing about when I do music prompts, which I've done a few. I've done Counting Crows and stuff like
Queen.
That. Yep, I've done Queen. I've done a few. And it's something to check out when you write towards a song. It's all about grabbing a hold of that song. And Squibble said it's on the heavy metal soundtrack. I love the movie Heavy Metal. It's one of my favorite animated movies of all time.
Yeah.
Definitely worth the check.
I didn't see that he said he wrote to that, so that would definitely change my opinion.
You can re-comment if you want.
Well, there's really not much to re-comment. I was basing it on the fact that it was reminding me more of the song, but if he was writing to the song to begin with, you know, that last line definitely fits in then and ties it all together rather than being, what I said, incongruous. So,
to be completely fair, I don't know the song at all, so I'm just judging the poem poem.
Like Jay said, it's an amazing song. It's very emotional.
I will have to look it up, but I think this, I was just literally going by the keyword veteran and everything that sort of comes with that, and I think he embodies that pretty well in the poem. So, Jay,
absolutely.
Who's next?
All
was
right.
That an animation film?
Yes, Heavy Metal.
Yeah,
I saw that randomly on cable, I think maybe another year ago from now. It's really not what I expected as the after effect of the Beatles' Yellow Submarine.
No, it was very unique. The way that they created it, I thought, was very clever. And I think they absolutely rocked it.
They parodied it on South Park also.
What
the
song
metal.
They parodied on South Park?
Yeah, no kidding. South Park is a parody. All right. I'm glad that Squibble is able to join us out on the board. We also had Naomi I saw out there. Rooster.
We have Pretty Bird and Rooster. I was just about to say that. Welcome, Rooster. Mm-hmm. Yay.
Yay. He may call in. We do have one more spot open. So if
drop
he wants
poem,
to give a call
baby.
In, he can. There you go. You got some smooches, Mocha. There you go. All right.
Yay,
I think what we'll do next is go ahead and go with Raz. Raz, your poem is up.
Yeah, this poem is called Tibbles and Tib. The prompt had been Thomas Kincaid Knight at Poetic Slice of Life. I'm surprised I even won the gold, but here's the poem. Tibbles and Tib. Tibbles was your regular snippet, and then the fight of which we endure was temporal portions in Russell's paradox from them and themselves and it of itself, painted 40 nanoseconds with a contrasting color to winter's blight, redondo blitz, and chilled sill. Approaching the frozen smudge, bladder, sideline, reeled sidewalks, while the bluish, genteel sky crashes, graying matter expressed as the confetti, series strands, left plinth, abstract manifestos with the umber cello and the pruned violin players by the concession stand of the establishment crystal shattering windows, the reflection of the shabby musician, a tempo the fifth of 100 millimeters endorsed with the trumpet, blaring a sound system, mute, nature engrossed, provoked. Tib is on opposite ends of the dead-end computer-generated bins, New York plazas covered in snowy frost, a glass-coating sheath of the passing shoppers who strut their pay-grade composite composure of the Queens and Harlem, abdicated 56 crown lots. Thomas Kincaid with the sound of the music, and Julia Andrews' pretty, nonchalant, immaculate face, the beautiful city, scenes collected through skyscrapers, machinery, gloom would have that one perfect snowflake rip apart the axis balance we're grabbing on unconsciously from the darkness, empty space over the horizon no one caught onto since yesterday and will stay without filling the human remains tomorrow. On the escalating boulevards, escapades, Tibbles is nearly evident, but I would forget that I am hanging out for Tib. And poem.
Oh, I love this. I love this. Now, sometimes we have a picture prompt or a painting prompt. And in this case, Raz went ahead and painted to Thomas Kincaid's painting called Blue Boulevard. And I think he did a marvelous job. I'm going to put Blue Boulevard up in the topic here so everybody can see it. But it takes very, very special talent to grab a hold of a picture or a painting and bring out the details in such a manner that help you see that whole thing. And in this case, Raz, I just absolutely love I love the way that you put this, the way that you overall descriptions the detail in your words. I think the detail in your words are specific, and that's what makes it a gold winner in my eyes. I think that you did a wonderful job. Hey, Rack, what do you think of this, and why do you think Raz won the gold?
So it's hard for me to do picture prompts because I can't see very well. But what I like to do, is rather than just simply describe it, I put forth the emotion that the painting gives me, the overall idea of it, and I do try and include, some of the details in it so that that's kind of what's inspiring me. So I'm imagining, without looking, that there's probably Trump and a fellow somewhere, because that seems to be something that he kind of hinted on. But he didn't just say, I see a trumpet or something simple like that. He more gave the emotion that he got looking at it, and which is what I would believe would lead to winning a contest like that, especially, with Thomas Kincaid, because his pictures are, so beautiful.
Oh, amazing comment, amazing comments. I really, really like the way you put that. Because
Thomas has fantastic talent in painting, as Stephen Kay have shown me at Poetic Slice of Life. He's a real gifted painter.
And obviously
yes,
moving.
He is.
Right there,
yes,
along with Norman Rockwell.
I agree with you 100% on that one. Mocha, what do you think about the poem overall, and what do you think about it winning a gold?
Oh, I definitely think Raz's poems are gold worthy. because he makes so many references, some of which you all know that I don't get because the culture is different. But his wordplay in general, regardless of what he's writing about, he has a very unique way of layering and weaving words that I think is just really fantastic. My favorite part, and I think it's probably because the part that I understand the best, the abstract manifesto with the umber cello and the pruned violin players by the concession stand of the establishment. I think just listen to how that sentence is formulated. It's so unique that you don't hear that in anybody else's poem. And then to see the painting does give some really great context to the poem. The way that Rat sort of captures, I think the painting looks like 18th century England or something. And he captures that and then in tiny bits seems to juxtapose to position it with modern references, skyscrapers and scenery. And I think I have questions. Y'all, I would rather ask questions for Raz's poems than comments because I'm always here to learn. So Raz, Professor Raz, what is the Russell's paradox?
Yeah, this is actually based on Bertrand Russell's paradox that if you had a single symbol can be multiplied by infinity to always represent collectively one unit as the whole of everything else that comes from the series. And so the Russell paradox is literally entitled R matrix. You have the one unit that can multiply an infinite amount of times. And it connects with Tibbles and Tib, which is a separate one, that if there was a point of place where one person was right now, it's likely in a certain given amount of time, someone else will occupy that same space and either have a recollection that there was another person there or that they had simply not existed by the fact that Tibbles does not know Tib and Tib understands there was Tibbles.
Oh, so it's kind of like the theory of if you don't observe it, it doesn't exist, essentially.
For one half of the equation, it would be Tibbles, unlike with Tibbs. Why is the paradox?
I get it. Thank you. Learning something new every day. I would like to shout out Titus on the board. Thank you for joining us. I'm so excited to have Titus here. I'm a big fan of him. And welcome to the line, Rooster.
Hi, Amucha. Thank you. I'll thank you for the smoocha. Hi, JCA. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine.
It's so good to hear your voice.
Yeah, can I say congratulations on your afternoon show? It's not, what do you call it? It's not our house, is it? Have you a different name for it?
No, it's the living room.
Oh, the living room. Right, excuse me. Well, that's cool. That's cool. That's I'm glad you're up and running.
Pull up a chair.
Yeah, and is that Raz? Is there Raz there? Hey, Raz.
Hey, Sir Cog.
I get you mixed up. There's Raz and there's a Rack. There's Raz and Rack, isn't there?
I'm here too, yes.
Hi, hey, Rack, yes. That's good to hear your voices.
They are twins.
Good poem. Listen, I'm the top rooster here. You roosters are only pretenders. I'm the one main rooster. You're not going to knock me off the perch.
Definitely not. Wouldn't try.
That was a good poem, Raz. Tibbles and Tib. I was interested to hear your explanation on the Russell's Paradox. It was quite subliminal and makes me think of parallel universes and all that sort of thing, you know, when you can't rule it out because as science progresses, they're finding out these things are coming true. So that was a great take on the painting. Beautiful, beautiful painting and beautiful poem. Well done, Mark.
Thank you, sir.
Are you ready for a rooster poem, guys?
Absolutely.
Well,
of course,
there we go.
Yes.
Paradoxes to roosters.
Yeah, this is a typical bit of rooster humor. JCA, you'll appreciate this. It's a couple of ex-military gentlemen, veterans, ex-vets. What do you reckon?
Hey, I'm reckoning. There's one of the worst, craziest, foul-mouthed soldiers I ever met was one of our chaplains. So, yeah. Whatever you have, brother.
Now, I know poems about the military and veterans, you know, but sometimes it's serious, and we think of our comrades and our colleagues and the great service of protecting us and protecting the country, and I'm familiar with that as myself, but many friends were ex-military men, and once upon a time, I wasn't always just a chicken farmer and rooster ducks. I wore a uniform one day back in the day. So this poem is based, it's actually based on a true story. It actually happened this, but when I say a true story, I mean the joke was true, the actual joke was true, so I made a poem out of it. So if you're all sitting carefully, sitting comfortably, is it okay to begin?
It is okay to begin.
All right, listen in now. This poem's called Last Laugh on the Fly. Two retired military gentlemen, an old codger and I, sat together in a local bar, flat out drinking stout. Then one ex-army chap, a covert wink under his cap, bragged aloud to a former colleague, top marksman in the corps was I, from 1 mile could shoot a fly. Up spoke his comrade, nay, better was I, best shot in the regiment. From 1 mile, I could shoot the gonads off a said fly. Old codger, myself, dumbfounded, could not get our heads round it. In quizzical utterance inquired, did you really castrate a fly? At which both veterans wry, and the patrons listening close by, laughing fell off their stools. Two gullible fools, old codger and I. And just to let you know, in case anybody doesn't, gonads is the technical name for testes, more commonly referred to as ghoulies, nuts, balls, and many other such euphemisms. And just to let animal lovers like myself, and even fly lovers, no fly was hurt in the construction of this poem. Cheerio, hope you enjoyed the crack, guys, and keep going, keep doing the good work. Love yous all, yous are brilliant, fantastic.
I appreciate that, Rooster. Thank you so much for calling. Oh my gosh, it's great to have a little bit of humor right there in the morning. Breaks things up and kind of settles us down. And thank you, Rooster, for this. I think that you did an awesome job bringing us some levity in this fine day. Raconteur, what did you think about good old Rooster's Fly?
Well, I've got to say, you can count on a rooster to be foul-mouthed. I thought it was brilliant. I mean, I love Irish humor. I love Rooster. I love the way he writes. You know, the old stories, old tales. You know, sometimes, you know, you hear a joke, and then it creeps its way into real life. And the expressions of one-upping each other about, you know, shooting a fly at 10 paces, well, I could shoot his nuts off, you know, shoot his eye out, shoot his nuts off. He was more polite in his description, but, you know, he kind of undid that when he gave us the little explanation at the end. But, you know, I still appreciate the delicacy of saying gonads at the poem, because, you know, let people look things up if they don't understand it, but the intent is still there, and it didn't hurt the poem at all. It was wonderful.
That is a great comment there. Razzle Dazzle, what do you think, my friend?
Yeah, I admit the humor is very well done here. It's the kind you might expect at any pub. If they say you're drunk and a fly appears, that it would likely be able to psychologically beat you based on the premise that it has a stronger sense of balance than the fact of your in sobriety from drinking.
All right. I love it. And Mocha, how'd you like that little levity by artist?
I think it's gold worthy. I don't know about anybody else. I mean, this is an example of different judging criteria, I guess. But I think that he executed this effortlessly. As far as the humor was concerned and the rhyme, and he's a really talented storyteller. He always makes his stories so neat, wonderful, good beginning, good ending. And the contest prompt was, how can you tell if a fly is male or female? So him saying the gonad
All right. Look at that. Well, I tell you what we'll do next. And let's do a little bit of an audio next. We had some great people that do some incredible audio for us whenever they submit it. And I'll tell you what, we see her out on the board right now. You know, we got a couple of people out on the board right now. So in this case, I think what we'll do is I'm going to put in Pretty Birds next. And unless Birdie's calling. Birdie, let me know if you're going to be calling. And I will go ahead and sneak Naomi's in first. Okay, you will be calling in a bit. Okay, goody. So what we'll do is we'll put Naomi in. This is called Fucking the Same. So everybody, enjoy. Dear old Naomi.
Fucking same. The spoon has drifted to the left again. That's my third cup of coffee, and the stupid spoon always drifts to the same darn side. Dickhead fridge started humming again. Not sure humming is the correct term. Only know the fucking thing always comes in the same damn tune. I light up my, oh hell, I don't know how many cigs I've coughed up, but my white cat is friggin' yellow. And why is that tissue leaning towards me from the box? Is it waiting for some gallant invitation from my snotty nose? The only thing straight as usual is the bloody blue broom. Son of a bitch, standing there, staring at me, pissing me off. Oh, yeah, I'm not deaf. Can hear its sneering whispers. Well, since you don't have anything more interesting to do, hon. Well, here, you bastard, stare at my middle finger. See, You're not the only one standing all straight and mighty on this glorious morning. Oh, and hell, I'm going back to bed and lying on the fucking right side this time. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness, my goodness, my goodness. Naomi, I have got to give it to her every single time. Here, do not go gentle into that good. That is the prompt, and I don't think she was gentle at all. This is great. I love the way she always just tells it is. And her prompt, somebody's boring me. I think it's me. I love that absolutely so much. There's nothing like a good witty humor, especially laughing at yourself. I think it's so important that we don't take ourselves too seriously, because too often we do. And that's when we really become disgruntled and upset all the time. But if we can laugh at ourselves, I think that we can turn around and have probably a life where we can smile on a few more occasions. And I think she did a wonderful job. Congratulations on this gold. This gold is well fucking deserved. Razzle Dazzle, tell us what you think.
Yeah, I find this to be what becomes of people when they reach a latter stage of development. Everything looks that more intimidating that you just wish it would stop trying to provoke the worst part of your own temperament. As to humor, there's plenty here with the tissue box, because after all, why else would it be there unless it wanted to know you were sick?
And Rack, what do you think?
Yeah, I think Naughty Naomi should be a drinking game. Every time she drops the F-bomb, you take a shot. I enjoy her outlook on life, you know. She definitely gets it out of her system in a wonderfully relatable way.
I agree.
I love that. Every time she says, oh, yeah, take a shot.
That's the Canadian in her. Oh, yeah. What do you think, Mocha?
I love this poem, cold worthy in my eyes. There's nothing gentle about Naomi's writing style. Usually she gets straight to the point. I can relate to this. It's almost like she's so bored she's losing her mind. She's cussing the broom and the fridge, the tube box. Her white cat is yellow. That's how many cigarettes she smokes. The cat's discolored like teeth. Oh, God. It's great. The humor in it is so wonderful, and it's so relatable. I've been at this point where you start talking and arguing with inanimate objects. There's still nothing else. This was quarantine for like the first 6 months. You just start losing your mind. And then after a while, you realize that, you know, this is going to be normal, and you sort of settle into your insanity. I think this is wonderfully done.
I love that concept, though. It mixes with our insanity. That's great.
Yeah. So up next, Jay, would you like to read Rack for us?
I absolutely would love to read Rack for us. Hey, Rack, is that a Muscovy duck?
I'm not sure. There was a guy around the time of COVID started a contest, and I kind of tripped across it. He was missing his friend, the duck. He used to go to a pond, and the duck would regularly be there, and the duck stopped showing up. So this is what I offered him in consolation for missing his friend, Red.
All right. And this is called Thinking of You, Red. And it goes like this. Where have you gone, Red? Don't you know you are my favorite Drake? I used to love to hang out with you when I would visit Mom near your home at the park on the lake. Not seeing you is driving me daffy. My mind is playing tricks, wondering where it is you've gone. Did you find work doing voiceovers on some late-night cartoon? You know, the ones that are always so poorly drawn. Or maybe you got into a fight while getting your hair done. Hanging with cartoon characters can get you into a fix. They act one way on the screen, but in real life they can be such pricks. I just hope you didn't run away with some gold-digging hen. They think they can wrap you around their wings just because they look like a 10. They have such expensive taste, and when it comes to shopping, they never get their fill. Sure, heads will turn when you're with them, but when it comes time to pay, they always smile and say, put it on his bill. So I hope you're safe and sound, because I hate that you had to depart. I think of you every time I visit the lake in the park, and sometimes even when I hear someone fart. And poem.
Jesus Christ, you really like that stuff. Mac, what the hell's going on with you, man?
Oh God, this is hilarious. Rack, you had so many good little puns here. But put it on his bill. Get it? I hope everybody caught that. And then the gold digging hen that thinks they can wrap you around their wings because they look like a 10. I can see why this one's gold for this contest. And it was specifically a humor contest. So I think you're one of the wittiest, funniest people on here. And this gold makes absolute sense to me. I think you did Red proud. You created a whole little storyline for him and where he might have gone. It's wonderful to imagine. You really pulled us into this sort of story about Ed. Oh, Raz, what did you think of this poem?
Yeah, you know, I guess every nature is very temporary. Could be the morale here. So the poet did a fine job of actually putting that duck upside down, so we noticed that somehow they don't completely fly like other birds.
Thanks, Ross.
Great comment.
When you turn a duck upside down, he quacks up.
See, it's shit like that. That's why you won gold.
These were punchlines to old jokes, though. I can't take credit for it.
Yeah, but you made it
find
all one big joke.
Yeah.
So you got to take your props for that.
Absolutely.
Right,
and I
want
to... I want to say that I was verified out on the board from Rooster and Pretty Bird. That was a Muscovy duck. Muscovy duck is a very unique looking. Very unique looking creature. But
it's ugly, Jay. Just say it. It's ugly. You can say
okay, it's an ugly looking bird. Well, I wanna say first of all that this was well worth the gold. Oh my God, you just absolutely nailed it, Rack. There is no doubt that this was the gold winner because of everything that you twisted and tied into it and the details you put into it and the laughing. Oh my gosh. You know what? The most important thing I think in a humor contest is humor. And a lot of people miss that sometimes.
That's funny.
People miss that sometimes. But ultimately, you absolutely nailed it. You have a natural sense of humor that kind of grabs a hold of a reader and grabs a hold of all of us. And I think you did a wonderful job.
Thanks, Jay.
And now I think it's time for a voice that I haven't heard in a while that I really have been craving to hear. And I think that we're going to go with Titus next.
Oh, great.
Yay, I know. I'm kind of excited.
Blog Talk better behave. I do not want to miss Titus.
All right, here we go. Oh, beautiful timepiece.
One beautiful timepiece. One beautiful timepiece splendidly preserved, the timeless possession that loved would outlast. For a decade or more with a parting observed, and a love interaction that folktale would cast. A mourning period holds an emptiness inside, and love has been held for as long as it takes. Hopes keep the cogs moving, slowly to abide death, my life has accounted many mistakes. Indeed, as it was no one's concern, I'll survive. Such is time to suspend this much of my faith. For the good we put into it, love would revive the blessing of God to keep us and love safe. Oh, beautiful timepiece. Seems this immaculacy which has distributed much ugliness elsewhere, beyond the lower reaches of banal. Compare distance from anywhere else, it ails in accuracy. Provenance was conceived, it's now defamatory from what I've heard, this absurd fact of life slowing down the clock. That is found auditory to movement, keeping with continuous strife that beauty is supine with it being skin deep, if something time can allow to have bestowed upon capture, I've incensed upon it stowed towards others, then my happiness shall keep. Beauty for duty's sake confined to any season, distinction not yearning, but learning to shine to comprise singling out a gift for any reason must enclave this heart berating to this shrine.
Oh, that's absolutely stunning. Absolutely stunning. One thing I love about some contests over at All Poetry is you can take a piece that you wrote before and enter them in what they call a pre-write contest, as long as it fits the criteria of that contest. This poem here happens to be a two-time gold winner, and I can definitely see why. When you know, sometimes poems elicit memories in a person. In this case, I remember my dad always having a wristwatch. You know, I myself have never worn a watch because I can't wear watches. They react with my skin and everything like that. But my dad always used to wear a wristwatch. He always used to tell time with it. And it's kind of neat that this would be something that would bring back. But I think it goes even deeper into that. It's like he is keeping track of time through someone. And the time spent with them is his glorious time and the time that is meant to be. And that's another great thing is the use of metaphor, the poetic devices within the poems themselves. It strikes up a chord to be that gold medal poem. And I think he did a wonderful job with that. Raz, can you give an opinion on the poem, and why do you think it's a two-time gold winner?
Yeah, there's quality work here from Titus. And so if someone was motivated the first time to find it, the best answer to the prompt, it seems to have had that same appeal from more than one viewpoint as to what is expected in this genre when it comes to precise rhyming and meter. I would say all of these stanzas, they're straight out of something like Keats or Byron. He designed them to literally allocate each comparative line and verse.
That's great. And Rack and Tour, what do you think?
It runs like a Swiss watch. It was beautiful. You know, his use of metaphor and phrasing just brings out the idea, for me anyway. When you talk about a timepiece, you're not necessarily about the watch, I think. And that's the idea. To talk about it without talking about it, describe it in a way that sometimes applies to other things that I think is beautiful use of language. And that's why when you read it, you'll get one thing and I'll read it and I'll get another. You were reminded of your father. You know, if I think of it literally, I'm reminded of some of these people. I had a teacher that wore his watch upside down. So the way that he would look at his watch was like so caricatured. It was so ridiculous that it stuck out in my mind, the way he would like flip his wrist upside down to look at it where he had the watch, you know, underneath by his palm, and just the action of doing that stuck with me. So anytime I think of someone wearing a watch, I'm like, you know, thank God you're not wearing it that way, because it looks so ridiculous watching him look at his watch all the time. But it stuck with me. So, you know, that was one of the things that kind of came to mind, the uniqueness of it. But, I mean, the poem itself is gorgeous.
That is great comment there. And Mocha, what do you think of this, and why do you think it ended up being a two-time gold winner?
As a judge, why I think it ended up being a two-time gold winner, the way that I judge things, like I said, I literally have a scoring sheet for different aspects of the write, one being how well somebody follows the prompt and my instructions, and the second being all of the technical stuff. Now, as a judge, everybody starts with a full score, and I minus from there. Reading Titus's poem, I can't find places to minus from, if you understand what I'm saying. I can't find a reason to dock his score. There are no mistakes made anywhere. It is literally flawless for what was asked of him. And the poem itself, if you read the little top line before he goes in, a poem to commemorate a wait of 16 years for love to unite, and 16 more to make up for this lost time. That adds so much context to the poem. And he layered metaphors here, describing a person as a timepiece, and encapsulating the story of how much time has passed in the wait and how much time he wants to spend in the future. And I think he also mentioned, there's a brief part in here where I feel like he's describing as sort of the concept of beauty being related to youth as well. It's not very overt, but I feel like he touches it. That beauty is the point with it being skin deep, if something time can allow to have bestowed upon capture. I have incensed upon it, so towards others, then my happiness shall keep. It sort of, to me, says that regardless of what other people may think or how many years pass, the value of his timepiece, quote, quote, to him and the beauty of it, it never will fade. Titus is so masterful. That's why I always, out of respect, call him Master Llewellyn, because he deserves the rank, honestly. I mean, it's a two-time group winner. You can't say no to that. And the second competition wasn't even a prompted competition, per se. It was one of those pre-write competitions, usernames that start with the letter T. And if out of all the usernames that start with the letter T on All Poetry entered this, Titus's poem won, I think that speaks volumes in and of itself, the quality of writer that he is. There's so many lines in here that I want to like pick apart, but we don't have the time. Titus, ironically, we don't have the time. Titus, thank you so much for honoring us with your voice and bringing this grace and elegance to the show. I really, really missed hearing you and reading you, and I'm so glad to have you participate with us. How are we doing next? Deb? Let's do Deb. Because she's here.
Hey, Deb.
Welcome, Deb.
Hey, you guys. How's it going?
Deb-ly.
Hello.
So, Deb, you got time to stick around, or you got to leave right away?
I was going to stay about a half an hour.
Come sit.
Yes, pull up a chair, grab a cup of coffee.
So what we'll do next.
Cupcake.
I think what we're going to do next is I'm going to go ahead and read mine, and hopefully give everybody a little bit of a laugh. So let me change up my voice here. Okay, I think I'm ready to read now. So let's go ahead and read a little Christmas in Wisconsin. This is Wisconsin. And this is Christmas in Wisconsin, don't you know? Yeah. Now I'm getting into the Naomi part. All right, Christmas in Wisconsin. All right, since it's the time of the season. It's Christmas in Wisconsin. Bundle up and go to the malls. If you don't have enough layers, you'll freeze your Christmas balls. Oh, what to get your parents, the nephews, kids, and more. All you need, all your Christmas needs are at the liquor store. Turkey would be scrumptious. Ham would sure be nice. But Grandma wants you to get some walleye through a 3-foot sheet of ice. I can't feel my toes, my ears, or my nose. Time to trade this outhouse for some nice indoors. So pass around the six-pack, the cheese tray with the curds. It's Christmas in Wisconsin. A little worse than you heard. End poem.
Oh, Jay. This is great. I've never been to Wisconsin, but you tell me all these stories about the cheese curds and everything. So that part cracked me up. And you freeze your Christmas balls. First of all, I'm sorry, Titus, that we just went from something so beautiful and elegant to this. Why are we so immature? Oh, but this was great. I can see why it won a gold and was also an HM in a comical poem contest. So it is a two-time medal winner. And it's, I think, quite deserving. You put a lot of your hometown, well, one of your hometowns, I think, in here. All your Christmas needs are at the liquor store. Man, that says a lot. I can't feel my toes, my ears, and my nose. I've always said that winter sounds like hell. I mean, the most that I have to deal with in the Caribbean are storms that screw with my Wi-Fi, like today. But snow, or like Jay has described to me, that apparently, I did not know this, apparently you guys can get weather that's like below zero and it's not snowing. Which to me is just, I can't fathom it. How does it be below zero and there's no ice falling from the sky? That's wild. But this was fun. Very much in the spirit of the season. Thank you for bringing Christmas up, because we're not even celebrating Christmas right now. I totally forgot it was a thing. I think this was a really, really fun poem. Deb, can I get you to comment on that?
Absolutely. Yeah, I like when you bring out your voices, Jay. And I have to say, on that note, like when you got to stuff like, where was it, the accent, the little emphasis you put there with toes and nose, from hanging out with somebody from Wisconsin, you nailed that. So I've seen you go from your country bumpkin voice to your Wisconsin is that an accent? Yeah, your Wisconsin accent. So, I cracked up when you said all your needs are at the liquor store. That just struck me funny. And then to realize that it's a Miller High Life commercial for your photo added to it too. So I thought this was really, really funny. And don't forget the cheese. So I think the only thing you left out was the cheese heads. But no, it's really awesome. Great read.
You know, it's not a gathering in the state of Wisconsin without a cheese tray.
I believe you.
What is that thing you were telling me about? Beer cheese soup?
Oh, yeah, beer cheese soup, one of the greatest things ever.
This sounds so disgusting, I'm not going to lie. Wait, bear, like B-E-A-R cheese?
No, beer cheese.
Beer.
Oh, okay. It's just your amazing accent. I misunderstood. That sounds really yummy, actually.
That sounds
it
good.
It's like drinking fondue.
Maybe that's because I hate bear.
It's like drinking
it's
fondue.
It's really good. It is.
Oh, frosty milk. Yeah, that doesn't sound appetizing to me. Okay, before I get to the next comment, I would like to welcome to the show Pretty Bird?
Pretty Bird, yes. Hello, hello.
Hey, Birdie.
Hi, Pretty Bird.
Hey.
The bird has landed.
Pretty Bird, did you hear Jay's poem? Would you like to comment?
I didn't. I was trying to call in, and my phone took like 5 minutes. It was ridiculous. But I hear it's amazing, and I will absolutely leave love later.
In the meantime, Raz, can you comment for Jay?
Well, it all depends on a person's perspective, if they like liquor. I think Thanksgiving in Wisconsin is just as good anywhere else in the United States, as long as you have the proper amount of beverages to enjoy yourself this holiday season.
Grog is very important to all holiday celebrations. And last comment, Rack, would you like to take it away?
Sure. I mean, this embodies all the tourist points of Wisconsin, and it's got a lot of great humor in it. You know, when you say cheddar, you know, some people don't say cheddar, they say Wisconsin cheddar. Like, you know, they make that distinction. So, you know, you can't think of Wisconsin without thinking of that cheese that you mentioned. And the 3 foot ice, the 3 feet of ice fishing, it's the temperature drops out there and you have to get that solid that you literally have 3 feet of ice fishing. Punk that hole out, that takes half the day in itself. You know, it's insane. So, you know, it's obvious that you've actually been ice fishing and done the things that you're joking about too. But and the accent was a huge. I can't do it like you.
A lot of people don't realize that we take full size cars and pickup trucks and drive them on 6 inches sheet of ice just to dig a hole into the ice and go fishing.
That is so crazy. What if the ice cracks?
I don't know how many people lose their vehicles during the year, but they have actual vehicle recovery teams.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a person that actually invented a special device that picks up cars off the bottom of lakes that fell through the ice.
Holy, what? Okay. This is so fun and interesting. And Jay, I would like to take this moment to pause and quickly mention that I think this is a perfect segue for it. Next week's Thursday show, the episode of The Living Room, is going to be all about your hometown or your home country. This is one of my favorite parts of getting to hear everyone's poetry, is hearing about where they're from and their influences and their culture. And so next week, next Thursday, I would love for everyone to tell me about where they're from. Take me on a trip around the world, and through the state, through Canada, through everywhere that you're all from. I would love to learn about your home. This is very fun and interesting for me. And I'm looking forward to hearing. So next up, Jay, I do think we have Miss Deb.
That's right. We have Deborah Lee. So Deborah, you're up.
Okay. And Mocha, that's an awesome idea. Okay, so I get to go after Titus and Jay. How did that happen? All right. I brought this poem, Jay, because of the fact that I had never heard Freddie Mercury cover this song, and I thought you would get a kick out of it, and I wondered if you ever heard him cover this song. Anyhow, the poem, the title is a line from the song. It's called Adrift in a World of My Own. The song is called The Great Pretenders. Here we go. The tangerine sun dips in the landscape. Night winds gust and the shingles quake. Eyelids droop and now sleep taunts me on the linen sheets, so cold this body shakes. Light from the stars and moon duck in the clouds. The floating sprinklers dump bucket loads of rain. Two arms ache to touch you as I curl up alone, wrestling the nightmares, slamming my brain. Drifting into the mist with no colors in sight. Icy shroud, black periwinkle from view. Body lays and moves from side to side, weeping. Wrapped around my pillow, brain picturing you. Cake on makeup covers the red blotches, then lipstick draws gloss on plump picked lips. Face wears the smiles of the clown and songs, masking the frown as my racing pulse skips. Mirror and smoke accessories camouflage silver trails, salty teardrops going down. Laughing to muffle all the silence that screams from the darkness, tossing the shadows around, and me, the pretender, pretends I'm not broken down. End poem.
Oh, yes.
I'm the great.
I'm the great. Pretty standard.
Of course I've heard Freddie's cover of this. I used to own his solo album, and that's what this was on, his solo project. And such, I love this, especially at the end there where you said, "And me, the pretender, pretends I'm not broken down." That's what the whole song is pretty much about. It covers that right at the end of the song. And I think that you did this song justice. And once again, this is another example of us taking a song, or a poet taking a song and taking the lyrics from the song and making that poem grasp the feel, grasp the overall concept of the song itself. And I think that you did such a masterful job in working this poem. I absolutely loved it. Wonderful job, Deb. And I'm going to start the comments with Birdie. Pretty Bird, what do you think?
Thank you, Jay.
I love the way you weave the imagery into emotion. I always have, Deb. And there are two parts to this in all its beautiful colors that stick with me very much. It's the two arms ache to touch you with a curl up alone, wrestling the nightmare slamming my brain. And it's in those moments of silence when there's nobody you need to pretend for, where you can no longer deny that pain. And then a couple of verses down, body lays in motion, side to side weeping, wrapped around my pillow, brain picturing you. And it's that whole side to side that when you primarily go back to, when you're so lost inside the pain, you go back to what soothed you as a child, that rocking motion, that the things that lull you just to try to soften the edge of that. And it's a harsh place to be. It is a gaping open wound, but there's a softness to the way you wrote it that kind of feels like swaddling in the same breath. So I found it to be quite awesome. You're very welcome.
Wonderful comment. Rex, what do you think about that?
Yeah, it was a beautiful tribute. Deb, I'm sorry. I'm kind of choking over here.
That comment was good. Why don't you take a sip of water? I don't want you to choke.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it.
Razzle Dazzle, what do you think?
Yeah, it's a great golden oldie. All that music from the 60s really elevates people's sense of having a notion to actually love. You can fall for what they're singing through all those classic 60s songs to the point that it becomes realistic, and what had originally been there was just the romantic notion lyrically.
Thank you, Rez.
Great comment on that. And last but not least, Mocha, what do you think about this and its gold medal status?
Oh, I think it's deserving. Prom seems to be oldies but goodies, and the song that she chose is definitely that. First of all, I did not know that Freddie Mercury's version of the cover, so learned something new today. And I, too, happen to really like the song The Great Pretender. I think Deb's done a wonderful job of storytelling a little bit in here, from the moment the sun sets and how the darkness sort of overtakes it the minute that night comes. And it's so funny that it starts from that point, as soon as night and start gusting and shutters start quaking. There is something different about nighttime that makes you feel a little bit more alone, a little bit more within yourself. That seems to be the time when all of the thoughts that haunt you creep in, you know, all the loneliness, all the contemplation, the senses of anxiety or imposter syndrome. For some reason, it happens in one combat. And so the way she started the story really set it up. She had some really wonderful lines in here, like the line that Pickard mentioned, I was going to mention, body lays in motion, side to side, weeping. God, I can relate to that. The caked on makeup covers the red blotches, then lipstick draws gloss on plump pink lips. You can take that metaphorically as well, because it sort of reminds me of putting on a mask to sort of pretend that you feel better. And that relates also to this beautiful image that she took that reminds me a little bit of a mask in itself, with the tears, the golden tears coming down. Deb has a really, really spectacular talent for choosing pictures for her individual prompts that help bring out the emotion in her poems and complement them very well. The ending was just fantastic. It leaves you a little bit breathless, laughing to muffle all the silence that screams from the darkness, tossing the shadows around. And me, the pretender, pretends I'm not broken down. And that's what we all do. It's what we all do. We put on the mask just in time for sunrise and go out and pretend like we didn't just have a whole breakdown the night before. Really awesome poem, Deb. Very deserving of gold, I think. Deb, since you're here, before we get to the next poem, you run a lot of contests. So I want your opinion as a judge, basically. What do you look for when you're giving out medals? What do you choose when you're giving out gold?
Well, I have to admit, I throw the rule book out the window. I throw commas and periods and form out the window, and I go by how you hit my gut when I get to the last word of your poem. And if you can make me feel, whether it's to giggle about cheese and beer or to make me cry or anything in between, you're going to win. So for me, it's more about how hard you can grab me with your words, with how you make me feel. So for this one, I backwards think for when I do a contest. For example, I 100% cater to the host and what they like and what I know they like, and hence me bringing the poem that had anything to do with Freddie Mercury, because I know Jay likes him. So for me, like I said, I heard you saying you couldn't find anything to take off on. I think it was Titus, just as I was dialing in, you were commenting, and you were saying how you could find nothing to take from him. Well, I find that to be true in everything Titus does, for one thing. But for two, it wouldn't change things for me, because you could have a flawless write with all the I's dotted and the T's crossed and all the commas in the right place. And when I get done, I say, what? What did that say? And if I can't get it, then that's what counts for me. So grab me by my gut and you'll win.
Sure, you wouldn't rather be grabbed by the hair?
Depends on the night of the week, huh? Depends.
That's a different show, Rack.
Wrong show, Rack.
Oh,
wrong
that's
show.
Right.
All right. Now, we're going to move on to Pretty Bird. And before I play your SoundCloud, Pretty Bird,
I'd
love
it.
To know your... Oh, you want to read it? Okay, excellent. Before you read it, I was wondering if you would like to comment on what you think makes a good gold poem.
From a judge's point of view or from a poet's point of view?
How about from a poet's point of view this time?
I have no stinking clue. I tend to skirt a prom, and I'm surprised people read me at all, to be honest with you, because I have a tendency to look at a prompt, and if it speaks to me in any kind of way, I'll take it on. But I tend to not drive up the middle of a prompt. If it's love, I'm usually writing jagged pieces of darkness about what love can do, not because that's what I want for any specific purpose. That's just what comes out of my face. And so a lot of times I get like, huh? Like, you know, the prompt was love, right? I was like, well, you didn't say it had to be sappy. And so I skirt a prompt. People who get it. People who don't. I do follow rules as far as, well, ironically, I didn't follow rules in the one I brought today. But I do usually follow rules because I like rules and I like knowing what the expectation is. If there's a convoluted mess of rules, I don't bother writing for it because then it takes the art out of it for me. But if there's simple rules, no sticky caps, keep it within this thing, whatever it is, I'm good with it. So I have those basic parameters, and then whatever I puke up comes out. Then that's just kind of the way that goes. I don't know if there's a formula to write a goal. I know that sometimes you win, sometimes you don't, and it doesn't mean your poem is any worse than anybody else's, which is a tough lesson to learn when you first start writing for contests and read some of the ones that are so different that it's so hard to compare. And, you know, you don't ever go to the judge and be like, what the heck were you thinking? You're just like, all right, then, next, you know? So as a poet, I have no clue. I tend to write whatever comes out. And if it skirts the prompt, it skirts the prompt. That's the best I know how to do, which is kind of sad, actually. But, you know, works for me.
That's perfect. All right, Birdie, you are up, and goodbye, Deb. Take care.
Bye, Deb. Thanks for coming. We love you.
So ironically about me and rules, this is one of the first contests I ever entered on here. And I didn't realize that it said read more, and there was like three more lines that had like line count on there, and I blew it away by miles. And I won anyway, which surprised me. But it was a touch of kindness that I appreciated. And it was a convoluted contest. It was four different poem prompts, but each poem prompt you had to write in a different feel. And I was like, ooh, challenge. So this is Asmodeus Agares Enemy. And for those who don't know, Agares is the destroyer of dignity. Asmodeus is the king of demons and the demon of lust. And it goes like this. And I almost feel bad because I tend to write dark and everybody's all lighthearted and even the pain was a little bit soft. I'm just like, gosh, here we go. Okay, Asmodeus, Agares, and me. I hear there's no caring, just lingering thoughts of what is believed to never have been. Still, your demons awaken my own as I fulfill my promise to give you all that I could. The evil surface and acid burns on the soul. Your sulfur dragons born of barren dreams. Deep fire that licked my flesh clean, and as you consumed the charred bits of my essence, I experienced the kind of freedom birthed in a place I never wanted to be. Relinquishing so much of my past, my pain, to have you grow stronger as I dig my nails into my own flesh to crawl out of the shadows I myself created. And I hear your gentle voice whisper vile commands, the hint of an evil smile as I dutifully acquiesce. Claimed in the darkness, found in the corners of daylight, I kept my promise, and you claimed me, mind, body, and soul. When my demons were quelled, as you slay them, as you bash them into submission, my knight in empty armor, my heart now unbound, became full. Perhaps you believed that my heart would feed your own, but your heart turned to ash the last time it loved. Still, your monsters were hungry, and my heart full. You held me in the darkness, your hand in mine, keeping my sadness company, turning friendship into love. 'Tis who you are, you who hate yourself, who you hate yourself for being. In that place where your sweetness flows, where there is no doubt that you care. Your monsters ate my heart, consuming chunks of my emotion, and I, having an abundance, was grateful for the chance to feed you. But my heart, now full of holes, still mocked you in its ability to smile. You kissed me and held my heart once again, so I would not drown in my own fear. And I gave you what you always wanted, mind, body, heart, and soul. And there you were, all the while disgusted that my promises don't feel like your reality, that my heart is more sweet than savory, and that my demons lie dormant while yours are ravenous looking for new prey. The holes in my heart smolder as I feel that familiar burn, the burn of the birth of new demons. And Paul.
Wow, pretty bird. I love some good darkness. People can say what they want, but I rather enjoy when an artist takes a prompt and goes in the opposite direction that you think they're going to go with it. I myself enjoy doing that, especially where topics like love are concerned. I even have, I say it in the poem, love's not all hearts and flowers. So stop writing about it like that. Be realistic, you know, and this is realistic. I don't know what it is with everybody on All Poetry keep writing poems about my ex, but this was just so expressive. It was so deep. It's gripping. And it relates back to what Deborah said earlier about poems making you feel something. And you read this, and I felt it. I felt it in my chest. I felt the little, I felt the burn of the new demons. Oh, beautiful. Bellissima. really well done, Joe. I love it. I happen to love dark poetry, and it's just, there's so much depth in it. There is so much. There's love, but there's darkness. There's a little bit of regret, but you regret it, and it, you still let it happen. You're still acquiescing. You're still dutifully following their orders. Make them feel good, make them feel better. It's, it's really good. Let's get some other comments, because I'm flabbergasted right now.
Oh, you're awesome. Thank you.
Rack, what did you think?
Oh, yeah, you want to talk flabbergasted. She always does that to me. So, you know, I completely lose my composure and start stuttering when I try and talk about what she puts down on the page, because, you know, she always touches me. You know, this is no different. To just the idea of, judging a contest that had a word limit and saying, you know, damn you, I want to throw it out, but I can't because it's too damn good. I could relate to that. So, you know, but, you know, I guess I'm biased. I'm a fanboy. I can relate to your version. But you see, when you talk about love, because, you know, it's almost intertwined and inseparable from the pain that comes with it a lot of times, because that's the only way someone can hurt you is if you love them. You know, if you don't care, then, you know, obviously it's not going to bother you. But, you know, when you're emotionally invested in someone, you know, your emotions seem that much more amplified, and you kind of bring that up. It's really... unfortunately relatable, as I frequently say, especially when I read your stuff. So, well done.
Thank you.
All right. Razzle Dazzle, would you like to comment on that?
Yeah, it does have a deep point that inner demons can pretty much destroy you from inside to the point of not knowing if you're going to be all that more functional again from receiving the kind of negativity that goes on there. This is very spiritual. It's a piece where if you believe in these inner demons, then maybe a part of you will really be lost along the way. And it's quite a point for any poet to bring up within descriptive verse.
Excellent.
Dracula and Shaman. Oh, and let me,
thank
since
you
my
so
brain
much.
Is starting back to work a little bit. The title where you named the demon, I did know who Asmodeus was, but Agaris is new to me. And I love that. I love that you use mythological, quote-unquote, symbolism to relate to the true manifestation of emotion. I try to do that quite often in my poetry, so I love to see other people do it, too. It's very fun.
Have a
say. Day. Last but not least, we get the last comment.
Oh, this is fabulous, and like I said, this is relatable, because we've all had that poison relationship that we've been in that has kind of torn at us and torn us apart and left us the way it left us. I think that that you absolutely nailed this with emotion and power and everything like that. I can see, even though you stepped outside of the rules, why you won the gold on this one, because
mm-hmm.
it does hold such a sense of just a sense of scorn behind it. I really, really enjoyed how you were able to take that emotion and put it on in words, because I think that right there is the gift that that I look for when I judge. So I think that you did a wonderful job on that.
Agreed.
Thank you. I actually tried to pull it out of the context. I was like, oh my goodness, I didn't realize. I'm so sorry. I'll take it off. Don't you dare. Like, all right, sorry.
Oh,
so, that was really
that.
Neat.
I would like to think of myself as a little bit of a hard-ass judge, because when I make my score sheet, and I mean, I put emotional depth on there as one of the things I score people on too. And like, for example, I'm a Jay fangirl. I really love how he writes his poetry, and I was such a hard ass in my competition. He got bronze. Like, he didn't even get gold. So if you can make me throw my own rules out as a judge, if you can throw my integrity out the window, I think for sure, hands down, you deserve that gold medal.
Thank you. It was a very long
right.
time ago. I haven't done, you know, the one and only time that ever happened. So there's that.
Good. All right. Now, talking about Mocha, I think it's time to play your audio and let everybody see your gold winner here.
The only one I have, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, and here we go.
The Strangling Stillness by Mocha 868. Covered painting in a room with no sunlight, half wilted bouquet of roses, a spider caught in the rain, a butterfly impaled on a needle, a thimbleful of blood, a pen gripped by a skeleton's hands, a compass that only points south, more than your perception, less than your impression. The quiet is where art goes to die. End poem.
I can't get enough of this poem right here, because you talk about power, you talk about emotion. She wrote this to Simon and Garfunkel's The Sound of Silence. And I think she did amazing, because oftentimes we dig ourselves back to that point where we're trying to be quiet and all we hear are screams and hollers, and every dark thing in the world comes back and hits us in a way. And the whole thing is just a power-packed invitation to all everything that's said within that song. You did a brilliant job, Mocha. I absolutely love and adore this poem. Birdie, what do you think of Mocha's poem?
So many things. First, the power of a SoundCloud, when you know how to lead in with music that's already going to make you cry, and then you speak in that kind of hushed tone, that kind of slow rhythm that forces people to listen in staccato breath. It's kind of art in and of itself. Having said that, the vividity of your imagery is has a starkness to it, in snapshots of moments that you can't hear until you're alone. This a butterfly impaled on a needle, which took me to places you don't even want to know, and a thimble full of blood, which is full of sanguination if they have any real blood to speak of. I have no clue about insects. But a pen gripped by a skeleton's hand, a compass that only points south. And that's what it feels like in that place when you are alone with all those things that you avoid during the day, or at any possible point with any overthinking of things that have nothing to do with anything because you just don't want to go there. But when you're forced into that place in that silence, it feels like you are nothing but a shell or your own skeleton, you know, inside out, we're good. And that compass that only points south broke my heart in two ways, because when, you know, if you're depicting sadness in visual art, or if you're not crying outright, you're looking down. If you're looking at a map, north is up and south is always down. And it has a weight to it that you can't do anything but be sad or go backwards. And to be able to convey an idea that is so profound in two lines is quite brilliant. So I am impressed, and I am a fan.
Thank you, Pretty Bird.
You're very welcome.
And Rev, what do you think?
Yeah. This has plenty of emotion. If there's an art to dying, you know, George Harrison brought it up in All Things Must Pass, 1970s double LP from his post-solo career, and it makes one think, do artists in fact just let themselves die in order to paint their canvases with their own blood? All kinds of passion which goes on in the turbulence and tumult of the artistic mind when it's at the throes of creativity, but not in full control of why it's expressing the spirit upon the surface of peace.
That is great. And Rack, what do you think? And tell us why you think this won gold.
Well, I'll actually start with why I think it won gold, because, you know, there's a thing when you use metaphors that you sometimes risk losing the reader when you get a little too abstract. But when you use something like a compass that points south, there's just an elegance to it that it's different. But it's relatable and understandable in so many different ways, I think, that and that kind of makes it stand out. because, you know, sometimes people will come up with a metaphor that they think is, you know, clever or whatever, and you know, people just look at it and they can't make heads or tails of it. But you didn't do anything like that throughout this whole piece. It was very concise and emotional at the same time. And, you know, you did a great job, you know. What's that word? I keep losing this phrase in my brain, and it kills me. But you know, you did a great job with it. I mean, it was highly emotive, and visually stunning with your imagery and metaphor.
Excellent, excellent. And what I'm going to do next is we have about 4 minutes left on our regular time before we cut out with all the people on the board. So I just want to give some thanks out. I want to thank Raz, Rack, Rooster, Deb, and Pretty Bird all for calling. Squibble, Naomi, Titus out on the board. Rooster, you're awesome. And I want to give a special thanks to Michael for all she does, because none of this happens without her. She, behind the scenes, you guys wouldn't believe everything she does, bringing everybody together. I want to thank our secret person who's doing our graphic design. Thank you very much. You know who you are. And, of course, Scientific, out in who does our intro music and our out music. Remember, check out scientific@gmail.com if you want to lease or you want to buy any of the music. That's scyntfk@gmail.com. scyntfk@gmail.com. Awesome audio that he does for us. Really appreciate it. And everything.
And don't forget Open Poetry on Sunday.
Absolutely. 6 o'clock Eastern Time, Open Poetry on Sundays. And the same time Thursday next week, noon. We're coming back to the living room.
And you're going to tell us about your home.
Yes, bring us to your living room, folks, and let us see you there. So I think what we're going to do next is I think we're going to do a little Gonzo next. And we're going to try. We are going to stick by a little for some overtime. So if you guys want to stick around, you can. You're not obligated, but we will have some other poems that we're going to be reading here. So,
is it bedtime for Gonzo?
It might be. It might be. So here we go. I love the title of this poem. Here we go. Price of survival is getting too high. All right, here we go.
Man, wise, wise. Collective existence owed to the burden of brutality BC. Every inch of ground has been served, it found the flesh. To the victor goes the spoils, while the spoiled bodies of the defeated rend back into nothingness, lost in a sea of violence. We leave nothing but a shanty tune. Etch names on stone, hoping to keep holding on to our own, at least for a generation or two. Why has a vicious death not deserved its own due? Forgotten memories for those torn from the past. No 21-gun salute to remember us and forget you. History is built on the backs of wounded warriors, vile depravity and dark horses. The story is known, but not their own. Fables the unknown expert courses. Ageless atrocities carved into lime, sharing their secrets far after their time. Same as the war book dusty on the shelf, hoping history will stop repeating itself.
Wow. What a deep poem. Dongo's metaphors here are fantastic. Every inch of ground has been served its pound of flesh. That is an amazing line. it really tells a story that encapsulates this title so perfectly. The price of survival is getting too high. A wonderful commentary on war in general and how I think humans sort of devour the earth and everything in it, including each other, including ourselves. Lost in the sea of violence, we leave nothing but a shanty tomb. There's a sort of poignancy there. I think I just pronounced that word wrong. But yeah, it's very, it sticks to you. All of these lines that he gives, they're all very impactful. I think this was really wonderful poem. It is a 3-time medal winner, a gold, a bronze from Pretty Bird, actually. It was not Pretty Bird, Sweet Bee, sorry. And an HM. So clearly the quality of this poem speaks to multiple different judges across multiple different prompts. I think this is amazing, amazing. Poem, and then he does these wonderful productions as far as the read is concerned to bring out the emotion in what he's saying. His voice is so I'm at a loss for words. what I'm trying to say is it's so gripping, so engaging. I really, really like this poem. More dark poetry. I love it. We need to have a dark show. Raz, what did you think?
Yeah, these are wise words from the poet. You know, I see a bit of a Tupac sharing war stories. There's definitely a sense of a higher form with Breverse as to bringing up the extent and history of war, and will anything be all that different? There's other notions that are popular where poets bring up this question, which is one of great politics. You have John Lennon's The Piece of Chance, or the Turtles covering the evil destruction. So it's one question that is repeated at society. Do we learn any different of our mistakes from the past and continue with these meaninglessly destructive wars? Where have all the pretty flowers gone?
Excellent comment. I'd like to take a little quick moment here to read what Gonzo said on the board in case he wasn't able to call in about what he thinks a gold poem is. He said, what I think a gold poem is, I think it has to be subjective, because I have poems I think are my best that barely get honorable mentions, while half-assed write-downs get gold. I have no idea, but I know when I choose gold for my contest, it's the poem I feel captures the spirit of the topic the most. And that's Gonzo's opinion on gold-winning poems. Jay, would you like to comment on Gonzo's poem?
Absolutely. Because this kind of grips me a little bit since I have been to war. And I am a third-generation war veteran. My grandfather served in World War I, my dad in World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. One thing that broke me down probably more than anything in my lifetime, one single moment that I absolutely lost myself, is when we were burying my father and Taps was playing and 21-gun salute was going off. that single moment kind of was a breakdown point in my life. It was a point where I realized mortality more than anything else. And a poem that I believe when you can grasp that in a person, yeah, that's something like that is going to flow as a gold medal winner to me. If you can grab a hold of me as a judge, make me relate, make me feel, you're going to get a gold. Because I am a person who loves emotion. I'm a person who believes in the writing of emotions, because that's kind of what poetry is about. You're either drawing a picture or you're bringing out emotions. You're hitting the senses. Everything about your poetry is about how you make people feel and the message that you create. And I think Gonzo right here did a unbelievable job with that.
Agreed. And it's really nice to hear your take on it too. As a veteran, I really thought as I read it that it might be very relatable to you.
Well, thank you.
All right.
Well,
who's next?
I think you can read the next poem for us, because it's
sure.
From someone you quite enjoy.
Okay. This is The Never-Ending Journey Epistle by Nutella. Dear, can you still remember how I started? My trembling tone, whispering notes. I can't help falling in love with you. My lips were smiling to the dream that I have quilted deep in my skin. Each stitch made with strands of gold pierced my tattered soul with silver sparkle hues, creating rainbow cement patches for my sable edges. I held you in me long before you can understand the portrait I have painted behind my shattered trunk. You delighted my hibernating passion and brought colorant to my dark water. I made you not only one of the stars above, but instead I blended you with the moonlit sky and made you shine, Orion. You helped me forget the face of demise and slowly, silently, taught me how to embrace the different shapes and auras of the snowflakes I've tailed so I can quietly adore you from afar. I met hope the day I first laid my eyes on you. I learned that my pneuma traveled to locks of love just to anchor it simply unto your ribs, never wanting to let go, never letting go, never. And as time trails to our fingertips, you opened your universe to me, bare, naked, where I can see through even your worst, most vulnerable veins. I love how you made my lips speak languages only we can understand. I became the dreamer, the ancient tale who traveled back and forth from my lips to your breath. I became the only walking constellation with your name engraved on it. You are my foreign experience who molded me into a unique interpretation. Sometimes whole, then shattering, only to become whole again, with cracks, crevices emitting light, sometimes wandering alone, but never empty. You, I will always long to feel, despite all buts,
You are my never-ending journey, eternally carved in my palm. Teyana, until we can. Until when? Who can really tell? I can only wish. I can only hope. I can only pray. With all my heart, with all my might, with all that I am. And so.
Oh, wow. Wise men say only fools rush in, but I can't help falling in love with you. Oh, my gosh. I love how she brought that. She really did capture the feeling. I don't think I've read a single Bella poem I didn't think deserved gold. She's got an artistic flair, an artistic touch to her that could fit anywhere. And you can't help but kind of dance along with her words as they go because of the way she brings that forth. Just she has a style all of her own, but her style is so stinking poetic that it never really lets you go and never really leaves you. And my God, what a wonderful read, Mocha. You read it absolutely perfect. Raz, what did you think about Bella's poem?
Yes, very spiritual. It has a profound question. We, on one level, know to accept God's love, but does it go so far to our own extremity when we reach that point of loneliness that we're wondering, is there anyone else who also signifies the notion of there being a universal love?
Great comment. And Mocha.
Well, Jay, I agree with you in that Bella always brings the emotion every time. And I do think that she is well deserving of gold in everything that she writes because she pours her entire soul into it. Bella does nothing half-assed. And poetically, I appreciate that. So much. The contest was to write a poetic letter. It was actually a contest by Patrick. So that's fun. And she definitely did. She definitely wrote a very touching letter here to her lover. She has some wonderful metaphors. The silver sparkles creating rainbow cement. I love that it's rainbow cement here and not rainbow vomit. And saying that I held you in me long before you can understand the portrait I have painted behind my shattered trunk. This is almost a story of how she met and fell in love with this person and how she's grown to really adore them. I can't choose a better word than adore, because she says, I met hope the day I first laid eyes on you. It really speaks to having a spark ignited in you by connecting with someone that you consider special. The whole thing is deeply touching, deeply romantic, very poetic. She speaks poetry every time she writes. Every last line is stuck in metaphor, you know, how you made my lips speak languages only we can understand. It's always so intimate. Her poetry. She always brings you so close to her and to what she's feeling. I think it was really fantastically done. And yes, I am a Bella fangirl. She deserves it. Her writing style is too unique to copy, you know? Nobody can ever quite deliver the way that she does. And if we're talking about judging competitions and as judges having the entries make us feel something to grasp us, then Bella is squarely within that criteria of being emotionally gripping. It's well, well deserving of gold. I can fully understand why. I mean, technically speaking, if you go through all the stuff with the literary devices and all that jazz, I can't quite dock points. But more so for the impact of the poem itself, it definitely garners a gold medal.
Come on, phone. Come on. Here we go.
Who do we got next?
All right. Well, I got a little bit of a surprise for us, folks, because this is a way that I can do stuff. Well, welcome, Sweet Pea, to the show. Hello, Sweet.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, Sweet. Wait, how did we get Sweet Pea here?
Oh, well, I had her call my phone, and then I conference called her in.
Oh, dope. Yay, welcome, Sweet.
Hi. You want to know how someone's so stupid? I was literally planning on being on this show at midnight.
Whoops.
I totally read that wrong. I was like, okay, I'll be on show, your show right after mine. And I'm like, oh, don't
ask. No problem. Well, you're in perfect time, Sweet, because we haven't read your poem yet, so we are ready for you right now. Before you start, you know, as let's do this as a judge. What do you think makes a good gold poem?
You know, for me, it's really about the emotion of it. How does it make me feel? How does it move? What's the imagery? What's the metaphor? But it's regardless of what the subject is and regardless of the rank, I don't put too much in, oh, is it a 9, is it 10, is it an 8? How does it make me feel? Whether it's abstract, whether it's, you know, based on a story, it doesn't mean that anything because I know there are great abstract poems that make me feel and there's really great story poems that make me feel, but they can be just the opposite. They're just words or they're cold or they don't mean anything. So it's got to make me feel something, whether it's love or sadness or fear or just something that makes me crack up. That's what I think it has to do for me.
Excellent. Well, Sweet, you're on the board.
And I apologize for this being so early in the day, but as most of you probably realize, most of my goals tend to lean towards the darkness.
Oh, no, so, that's fine. We love dark over here, girl.
So let's go to a wedding. We all love afternoon weddings. So this is Wedding Bliss. The shine on the dark pews of the church danced in a rainbow of colors as sunbeams burst through barbaric scenes of a crucifixion on stained glass windows. And she smiled. Each guest has been seated. The organ played a hollow, melodic tune. Hushed tones begin to silence as the moon rose and candles were lit on the altar. Her march was to begin. White taffeta and lace were the icings on the cape of her tight-fitting bodice, cream gown as she wore underneath, and the dress made a swish, swish sound along the paper aisle. Dark black suit and black eyes met her gaze, and neophyte desires begin to heat. The blood of hunger, man and wife speak her minds of plans ahead. rosary beads of cherry wood encircle tiny fingers. Prayers to deities whispered in devout tones. Within Marriott doll with skin of ivory snow rose. Flash, the sharpest teeth splashed the throat of priest. Husband laughs with glee, the pleasures to watch his wife feed. Quickly unseen, the bridal party screams. The altar streams with holy water, giggles of pleasure rise. The bride and groom dance up the aisles as guests rose in horror. A reception of delight at church locked up for the night. Guests were respected, sat up and rearranged. Body parts misplaced, jigsaw puzzles, just for kicks, fun and games. White dress trashed, blood stained. A dry cleaner's challenge. Ripping limbs and tossing bodies, suckling necks and blood devouring. Chit-chatting, laughing newlywed saints of the fun of their wedding. Anticipate the joys of their honeymoon. End poem.
Oh, gosh. That was awesome, sweet. Other people don't like dark, but I do, and I love that you lured us into a false sense of security in the beginning. You know, it's a regular wedding, nothing to see here. And then all of a sudden, they go all vampire on everybody in the church. I think this is awesome, awesome storytelling on your part. I love how you describe things. The sunbeams that burst through the barbaric scenes of crucifixion. Thank you for describing it like that, because personally I've always kind of thought of it like that. Just a little bit. I mean, crucifixion's got its own, I understand the symbolism, but man, nobody wants to see that. Screaming through a church for you to, nobody does. And it's sort of, it's like a little bit of a,
crucifixion was barbaric. Trust me.
Yeah, it was. That way. I remember being I went to Catholic primary school, and they took us around the church to see the stations of the cross, and there's Jesus bleeding out all over. And I remember looking at it and crying, thinking, this is horrible. Why would anybody do this to another person? It's so morbid, and it's a little bit of a foreshadowing, that's the word I'm looking for, the barbaric scenes of crucifixion, and then you go down to the barbaric scene of the wedding itself. I love the little bit of humor, a dry cleaner's challenge, and anticipating the joys of their honeymoon. This is quite a Bonnie and Clyde type couple, almost like married serial killers. Just can't wait for their honeymoon. I think that was really beautifully done. And the contest was Into the Darkness Bride, so nailed it. Definitely understand why this won gold. And it was also a front page pick. It makes a lot of sense to me. Really, really well done, sweet.
Thank you.
Raz, can you comment for us?
Yeah, you know, I think that's one of the most special moments in most people's lives when they're married. It's definitely a memory which goes on many years later, of which both parties had agreed to take those vows, and they're ones that are not proposed lightly in the sight of the face of law and moral and God. So this does it justice to have the reader and the viewer look at the wedding and try to decide what really goes on there, which is left all that more secretive than what there is with the whole notion of couples swearing their vows upon the altar and getting niche.
And you know, there's no contract quite as binding as those made in blood. So maybe this is a good way to get married. Jay, what did you think?
Oh, man, this brings me straight down to Perth, Australia, and the Bernies. a couple that kills together, lives together, you know. you're saying a lot here, and this is gruesome, but absolutely has a touch of humor to it and a touch of description. You know, that's another thing about poetry, is when you can actually use the descriptions within your poems and allow people to actually visualize and experience what is going on, you've done well, and you deserve a gold. So wonderful job, Sweet Pea. Bravissimo.
Very Game of Thrones.
I know a real bad marriage scene. Kill Bill, Volume 2. Quentin Tarantino.
Good
bang, bang.
That's funny.
Yeah, Game of Thrones Red Wedding is what came to mind. For me.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderful. Well, we got one more poem left.
All right. Who's it?
And I'm going to have Raz read Atamakusan. So, Raz, here's a little Atamakusan.
Yeah, just going through the scroller for a second. I guess I took it too literal, Sweet Pea. You're right. I saw wedding. All I could think of, where's the chaperones and the flower girls? But Shadow love. Autumn moccasin, shadow love. Thinly scraped across weighty two-dimensional space, the sun rotates and I bleed away into pavement, Hiroshima splay. Am I here? I contemplate situational resonant fate, starring up into the goddess's bellowing, boisterously brash sway of light, a sphinx, complexity, brilliant and gray, galvanizing smile. I just exist. What is a shade to the rhythm of light? Waves separate the space between, and I'm a chord, a melody, charging in depth, shallow dissonance. Harmony swings around in sung beauty, inventing your might and tune, brittle. I just hang there, follow its fault, a leprous wretch, beggar's hands with wolf stalking want. Once your salt river flood fell upon me that moon brilliant night, I was vapor, dead, you alive, could you ever know? I've been with you every step of the stroll. I paid every price right along your side. I've been here, adorned upon your presence with no eloquence in particular. I am but a two-dimensional vagrant that will always be with you in love, in shadow, your shadow, a shadow.
Oh, this is cool. I really like this. Sometimes what you got to understand about some poetry, it's depth. And the depth of how the poem goes and how it drags you in and the visualization that it brings. You know, this is a slight touch of the abstract, and I love the abstract myself. Abstract poetry for the 101 course is using metaphors to describe something that goes beyond what people understand. And I think that this is filled with great metaphors, and I love the way that he put this whole thing together. Well worth the gold. Sweet, what do you think about this poem? Sweet, the button.
Well, I'm here. The button, I know. I love poems that talk about spaces in between spaces. So the line, what is a shade to the rhyme of light, waves separate the space in between. I'm always fascinated about that. So I loved how he kind of waves through that. I'm but a two-dimensional vagrant. So this whole idea of being a shadow within a shadow within a shadow, I thought was brilliant. Because what are we but the spaces in between? And so this just kind of had me on the edge of my seat, kind of thinking of that, the moments between the moments. And that kind of something I try to embrace or try to write about too is, you know, the hours between, you know, dawn and dusk or dusk and dawn. So that's kind of weaved through some of my poetry too. So this was pretty amazing.
And Raz, what do you think?
Yeah, it shows definitely a kind of dual nature here. I can't come to grips with who's meant by the shadow. Is that supposed to be someone close to you that you don't know, but they play that same role as the shadow would, as always being around, caring for you, and you having no notice more than you would the shade. So this is definitely kind of mysterious, right, when bringing up any forms of shadows, because then you're pondering upon such enigmas like darkness and if two-dimensional spaces contain intelligences which we ourselves do not usually acknowledge nor would know how to recognize from a third-dimensional plane.
Wonderful. And Mocha, you get the last comment.
Contest was right in his best, so there is no particular prompt. This is just something that's inside him that he would like to express, which I appreciate. I agree with Rav a little bit in that I'm a little confused as to who the shadow is. It could be an actual person, or it could be the shadow of a concept, not something quite physical or as literal as a person. I'm leaning towards it being a person because the lines, I was vapor dead, you alive, could you ever know? That, to me, sort of rings of a sense of rejection, perhaps, or not being recognized by someone that you care for or admire or seeking approval from, perhaps maybe a parent, not even a lover, you know? I've paid every price right along your side. I've been here, adorned upon your presence, with no eloquence in particular. I like how he says that so simply. I am but a two-dimensional vagrant. That's a wonderful turn of phrase as well. That will always be with you in love. Maybe it is a person. Maybe it is a person that perhaps in a relationship he felt as though he constantly gave or constantly lifted up this person, and in lifting them up, you know, when you put an object right above you in light, that object will cast a shadow on you. So perhaps he is doing that. Perhaps this poem does speak to him lifting someone up to the point where they're blocking his light and he is now their shadow. Very well written, and I agree there's a lot of emotional depth, and the play with words is very fun, a sphinx of complexity. That's beautiful. He has really, really beautiful phrasing. This is the first that we've read on the show from Adamaku-san, is it? It's the second.
No, this is our first one.
This is our first one? What a first impression. I think this is fantastic, definitely deserving of gold. Lovely, lovely poem overall. And thanks for closing out the show, Adamaku-san. This brings us to the end of our first episode of The Living Room. Thank everybody for coming out. For Golden Hour, for giving
Thank
us your
you.
Gold. It's shiny in here right now. A big thank you to everyone who dropped, Sweet Pea,
Pretty Bird, Brewster, Raz, Breck, Titus, Jay, of course, and all the other people I feel like I'm missing right now. Patrick, Squibbles, Naomi, Deb, how could I forget Deb? Gonzo, Bella, and Adamaku, who's back. Thank you for everybody participating on the board. I know you can't hear us right now, but hopefully you'll hear us at playback. Thank you once again to Scientific for giving us our intro and outro music. Don't forget that all of his beats are available for sale and for lease, and that everyone can contact him for purchase of those beats at scientific@gmail.com. That's scientific@gmail.com. Do not forget that Sunday we have open poetry at, remind me of the time, it was 9? Was it 9 or 6?
6 p.m. Eastern.
6 p.m. Eastern. Thank you, Jay. And next Thursday, we're back again in the living room to talk about everybody's hometown. So bring us to your living room next week. You can submit something pre-written or you can write something new. It doesn't really matter. I just want to hear about where you're from. And with that, Jay, can you sign us off, give your goodbyes, and play our outro music?
Yeah, thank you, everybody. And we're looking forward to some great shows coming up. And see you all on Sunday. And here is Del Sol by Scientific.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Jay.
Coca 868, and this has been The Living Room. Goodbye, everyone.